We are going to begin our study. We're going to read Psalm 86. Hear, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Guard my life, for I am devoted to you. You are my God. Save your servant who trusts in you. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I call to you all day long. Bring joy to your servant, for to you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. You are forgiving and good, O Lord, abounding in love to all who call to you. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Listen to my cry for mercy. In the day of my trouble I will call to you, for you will answer me. Among the gods there is none like you, O Lord. No deeds can compare with yours. All the nations you have made will come and worship before you, O Lord. They will bring glory to your name, for you are great and do marvelous deeds. You alone are God. Teach me your way, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart, that I may fear your name. I will praise you, O Lord, my God, with all my heart. I will glorify your name forever, for great is your love towards me. You have delivered me from the depths of the grave. The arrogant are attacking me, O God. A band of ruthless men seeks my life, men without regard for you. But you, O Lord, are a compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. Turn to me and have mercy on me. Grant your strength to your servant and save the son of your maidservant. Give me a sign of your goodness, that my enemies may see it and be put to shame. For you, O Lord, have helped me and comforted me. When you're under the cosh, how do you react? When things have turned out pretty bad, you're struggling, when people are on top of you, when you feel you've been hard done by, and things are just getting difficult, what do you do when you're under that emotional pain? When you've got that, you know what I mean by emotional pain? Just do anything just to release that emotional pain that you feel in your heart. Now, David is under attack here. The psalmist is under attack. We don't know the circumstances. The arrogant are attacking me, O God. A band of ruthless men seeks my life. Men without regard for you. Oh, we don't. Maybe if this psalm is attributed to David, or the body of psalms that belong to David, if he wrote this personally, then perhaps it's when his son Absalom and the army were after him to kill him. Perhaps it's that. Perhaps he's running away from Saul. But in a sense, it doesn't matter what the exact circumstance was. It doesn't matter, because in a way we've all been there. We've all been feeling that emotional strain, that pressure, that difficulty. And to be honest, we live in a very aggressive society, do we not? We live in a very aggressive society. Maybe I'm more sensitive to that than you, because I lived out of it for 20 years overseas. But when I returned, I just felt the increase in aggression that there is in our society from before I went to Brazil for 20 years. And you might feel it at school. Ask our school children what they're suffering at school, and it's a live issue. It's in the press. It's in the press because it's a live issue in the classroom, in the playground. There's all the Facebook and cyberbullying, Twitter, email attacks, all kinds of things. And young people are vulnerable to it, and they suffer it even more so because these days they can be bullied anonymously, and that just makes it worse. But it happens in the workplace too. Demands on firms, there's cutbacks, firms have got to be ever more profitable, and bullying, aggressive, downsizing is rewarded among managers these days, and that creates tensions and difficulties in the workplace. Relationships are not good, and relationships break up, and we see marriages and couples breaking up, and there's tug of love with children. There's an aggression very often in the breakdown of relationship. We live in an aggressive society. And you step back and think, why? We're one of the richest countries in the world. Enough wealth in our country and comfort for everybody. We could be living so well and so easily, but there's that aggression there, and that's that. And you feel that even from Bangor. Now you go and you go to places like Manchester or Liverpool or Birmingham or London, and in the inner cities where you've got gang warfares, where there's this, where if a child walks into the wrong street, they will be beaten up just for being there. And you say, well, that's not the country I want to live in, but it's the country I am living in. Aggressive society. And when things go wrong and when relationships break down, aggression gets worse. And I was just thinking, looking at this psalm, how the psalmist copes with aggression and breakdown of relationships and difficulty and bitterness, emotional pain, and how the world generally copes with it by lashing out and getting its revenge in first. Very different. And it made my mind wander. You know, my mind does wander. You have to forgive me. My mind wanders, as you well know. And I was just thinking, looking at my CD collection, which isn't vast, it must be said, and probably not to your taste, although of course it is to mine. I was just comparing CDs on my CD collection. And I was looking at some of my favourite CDs, and there I've got Fleetwood Mac, a band which before some of your time. And their classic album, Rumours, was recorded among time of disastrous, catastrophic breakdown of relationship in the band. 5 band members, all of them going through divorce. And it wasn't helped by the fact that there were 2 couples in the band who were married to each other. So there were 2 couples and a 5th one, and they were all divorcing. And then the songwriter band began to get at each other through the songs they were writing. So you go through the songs written at the time, You Can Go Your Own Way, Call It Another Lonely Day. If You Don't Love Me Now, You'll Never Love Me Again. Never Going Back, I Don't Want to Know. These were the titles, and they were aimed, and I was watching them being interviewed on television recently, saying, yeah, actually, I was firing at my husband or my wife that we were divorcing. I mean, the only one on the album that's not like that is Christine McVie's You Make Loving Fun, which sounds great, except that she was writing it not for her husband, but for the lighting engineer she was having the affair with. And that's how they dealt with the pain, just by knifing each other in the back. They then, of course, then these songs became immense hits, so they had to stand up and sing it every night, knowing that the song being written to stab them in the back. And incidentally, they're still singing them. There's money in it, so they're still singing them. And then another, you can see, just maybe just telling you something about myself, Phil Collins is another. Now, his classic album, Face Values, was written at the time he was divorcing his wife. His wife divorced him, his wife walked out on him. And he again uses his songs to get it and complain. If you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. Nice. If leaving me is easy, coming back is hard. And then he wallows in self-pity. So take a look at me now. There's just an empty space. There's nothing left here to remind me, just the memory of your face. And then another of my albums is by a Beth Nielsen Chapman, an American singer. Now, Beth, with some of the church members we went to see in Llandudno, it was phenomenal. Even since she sings a Welsh hymn in Welsh. Why? How? Oh, it's awesome. But you go through Beth's life, in, I just wrote it down here. 1994, she lost her husband to cancer. In 2000, she got breast cancer. And in 2009, a brain tumour. And through all those events, she was writing songs. And there's sorrow there, but there's no self-pity. And she's still singing the songs, and there's no self-pity there. I mean, it's there, you know, the sorrow's there. Catch a smile on someone's face, and so on. There's deep sorrow, but there's no self-pity in her songs. And she expresses her grief, but she's not sorry for herself. And the reason is because Beth has a Christian faith. I've come to trust the hope it brings, to find your love in everything. Even as I fall apart, even through my shattered heart, I'll catch your smile on someone's face. Amazing grace. I'm going to shake my soul and release my hold, giving up control and let the rest unfold, because it's a long, long way from here to where we go, she says. And that's how Beth got through tragedies that would have sunk better people than Beth, maybe. It was a Christian faith that held her together. She survived it all, and she's still writing, still singing, she's still wonderful. And I was just comparing those songs on my CD rack. They kind of sit next to each other on the shelf. And they all tell stories of pain and difficulty and anxiety, but one of them stands out. And what stands out is that faith in God, which saw that woman through it. And so we come now to the psalm, which we're going to go through quickly. And you're going to have to follow me on the projection, because I haven't got a screen in front of me, and so I can't change the things myself. His first petition is this. The psalmist has three petitions. Hear me, teach me, and turn to me. First, hear me in verses 1 to 10, if you've got your Bible open. Just glance it, because we're going to go through very quickly. Hear me, he says. That's his petition. And he says four things about himself. We learn four things about himself. First, he says, I'm poor and needy. I'm poor and needy. He hasn't got the resources to get through this. He realizes that, humanly speaking, he's not got what he needs to get through it. I'm poor and needy. He's coming to God and saying, can't do it. Can't do it, Lord. I can't do it. Just don't. How am I going to get through this? Just don't know where it's going to come from. Don't know where the money's coming from. Don't know where the physical resource is coming from. Don't know where my strength is going to come from. Secondly, but I'm faithful towards you. I'm devoted to you. I'm faithful to you. Poor and needy, but I'm devoted to you. I'm faithful. I'm trusting in you. Do you know what? I'm not going to let go. I'm struggling to hang on, but I'm going to hang on. And then I call on you all day long in verse 3. I call on you all day long. One of the old divines, William Plume, has said, a great difference between saints and sinners in prayer is that the sinners who pray at all pray only when they're in trouble, whereas saints cry daily unto God. I cry to you all the time. And fourthly, I trust in you. I trust in you. I lift my soul up to you. So those are four things. He's poor and needy, faithful, calls on God, and he trusts in God. But then we learn four things about God. And we learn firstly that God is forgiving. God is forgiving. Now, the psalmist is under no illusions as he comes to God. He's not pretending to be perfect. He's struggled, you know. And he's done things wrong. And the psalmist says, you know, I'm not coming to you, Lord, as pure and the whitest snow. I'm a sinner. But you're a forgiving God. So I'm coming to you, God, because I know you forgive. And you're good. You're good. Lord, he says, you're good. Verse 5, you're forgiving and good. Matthew Henry, the Welsh commentary writer, said, where else would a beggar go but to the door of a good person? That's true, isn't it? You wouldn't go if you were desperate, you wouldn't go to the door of a bad person. You'd go to the door of a good person, and you can come to God because he's good. And then he says, you abound in love. Third thing about God, God abounds in love, which is just as well, because I'm hard work. I'm hard going. I'm not an easy person to deal with. He suggests as well that God abounds in love because he needs so much love to put up with me. Maybe you're better than me. I hope so. Can't be much worse. But God's love abounds, which is good, because I need that love. I need somebody who's like that. And he says, because you know what, God? Your deeds are great and marvelous. In fact, we're on four things. There's four things about the great and marvelous deeds. They're great, in verse 8, great among the gods, great in the heavens. There's none like you. The commentary writers struggle to know exactly what the psalmist meant by among the gods, because clearly the psalmist didn't believe that there were other gods, but God, there was only one God. So maybe it's among the false gods. Derek Hidner, I think, rather optimistically says he means angels. I'm not convinced by that. Don't think anyone is, but it was a good try. Thank you, Derek. But whatever, it basically means among the heavens, among the spiritual beings. God is great. God is great in the heavens. And then second part of verse 8, he's great on earth, great in nature. No deeds can compare with yours. In verse 9, he's great in the world. He's great among the nations, great among the peoples of the world. And verse 10, he's great in history, for you are great and do marvelous deeds. So God is great in heaven, great in nature, great among people, great in history. God is great. He's forgiving, he's good, he abounds in love, and he's great. That's four things about God. Then there's four requests that the psalmist makes. Four requests. First he says, God, hear me. God, would you please hear me? Verse 11, teach me your way, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth. He wants God to hear him. And again, I think it was Matthew Henry said, as the careful doctor listens to his patient, so God hears us. God listens to us. And Susan, when we lived in a place called Cuiabá State Capital, a lady came with her daughter, teenage daughter. Daughter clearly had a lung infection. Her lung was full of fluid, but we discovered that the daughter had TB. We didn't know that. So she took her to the NHS equivalent, and she got sent here and sent then. So she came with the test. They come right from the interior because they get no treatment at all in the interior. So he came down, stayed with us, and Susan took them there. So Susan walks in now to this doctor's consulting room. There's Susan, and there's the mother, and there's this teenage girl who's as white as a sheet. The girl has just got no colour. It can barely stand up. And they stagger in, they sit in the three chairs in front of the doctor, and the doctor picks up the results, said, what are you doing here? This is the wrong place. You've got TB, you shouldn't be here. You should be in a TB clinic on the other side of town. I can't help you. So they get up, as they get to the door, the doctor says, by the way, which one of you is the patient? Please, just be grateful for the NHS, okay? As the doctor listens to the patient, God listens. God knows what's going on. And he says, God, guard me. God, guard me. Verse 6, hear my prayer. Verse 7, in a day of trouble, I will call to you. Verse 6, have mercy on me. And then he says, God, give me joy. Give me joy. So these are his four requests. As you go through these verses, you'll find in verses 1 to 10, hear me, guard me. We live in an aggressive society. Wouldn't it be great to have a bodyguard? You know? I bet some of our kids would love a bodyguard at school. Just somebody to sort of, you know, look after them. And I knew a guy who was head of security at a university in São Paulo. And he's walking through the student sort of area, and there's a guy there with his dirty feet up on the chair. As he walks, he said, just please take your feet off the chair. And the guy said, "Who the bleep, bleep, bleep are you?" And he said, "I'm nobody, but these two guys work for me." And there's these two big security guards standing behind me. I said, "I'll take my feet off, thank you. Guard me. Yeah? Have mercy on me. Give me joy." So those are the four requests he makes. And then he goes on to teach me. Hear me and teach me, verses 11 to 13. "Teach me your way, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart, that I may fear your name." And this for me is the best verse in the one of the best verses in the Old Testament. And he says, "Give me an undivided heart." Isn't that one of the best prayers of the Bible? Give me an undivided heart. Isn't that what you want? Andrew and I were just praying before the beginning of the service, thinking, "Do you know what? That's just what I want. That's what I want. Don't need anything. I don't want anything else. Give me an undivided heart." It's a theme that you find right through Scripture. James chapter 1, verses 6 to 8, picks up the same sort of theme. Verse 5, "If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he receive anything from the Lord. He is double-minded man, unstable in all he does." Double-minded. Psalmist says, "Give me an undivided heart." Can't make up your mind what you want. You want to serve God, you don't want. I've known people like that down through all the years of ministry, 37 years of being a pastor now, and just people don't know what they want. One moment they're all on fire for God, next minute they're as cold can be. They just sway back and forth. You never know where they stand. They disappear from church for a while and they come back all power and fire and then disappear again. I don't know what they want. "Give me an undivided heart," says the psalmist. Romans 7, verse 15 to 17, Paul fighting the divided heart. It's one of the classic verses of the New Testament, and it gets to the heart of the human condition. "I do not understand what I do, for what I want to do, I do not do. What I hate, I do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. As it is, I'm no longer myself who do it, but it is sin living in me." Have you ever hated yourself? I think most of us have. "Why did I do that?" Just why? Why on earth? I wouldn't dream of doing that today, but yesterday I just did it as if it was easy, natural. You know, divided heart. Jesus taught this parable of the sower about people, you know, the cares of the world come and take away the seed. Divided heart. Not with Jesus and not with Jesus. Half with Jesus, half not with Jesus. So many people like that. "Give me, Lord, an undivided heart." That's the prayer. Look, forget everything I've said tonight. Remember that verse. "Give me, Lord, an undivided heart, that I may fear your name." Psalm 86, verse 11. And then he goes on with the promise, "I will praise you, Lord. If you give me the undivided heart, you know what I'll do, Lord? I'll just praise you non-stop. I'll glorify your name forever, because your love is great towards me. You have delivered me from the depths of the grave." So again and again he sees God's helped him out. So hear me, teach me, and finally turn to me, verses 14 to 17. Because no matter how much he wants to be freed from this situation, he hasn't been freed yet. It's ongoing. He's hanging on in faith, but it's still, as he finishes this psalm, he's still under pressure. And there are three things here. There's his position, his pedigree, and his purpose. His position, he's a servant. He's a servant of God's. Verse 16, "Grant your strength to your servant." So he sees himself as a servant. That's his position. He's no higher than that. He'll never rise higher than that of servant of God. He doesn't want to rise higher than that. That's good enough for him. That's all he wants, to be God's servant. And then there's his pedigree. He comes from a believing family. Save the son of your maidservant. He's fortunate, he comes from a believing family. Not all of us here have that privilege, but he did. And what a privilege for our children to have believing parents. His position, his pedigree, and his purpose. Because he wants God to be glorified. He says, give me a sign of your goodness that my enemies may see it and be put to shame. He wants God to be glorified in this situation. Now, I forget that when I'm praying. You know, when I'm desperate, and I'm hanging on desperately, and I'm really angry, and I'm hurting, and I'm emotionally drained and angry and bitter and frustrated, I forget to pray, God be glorified in this. I just want out. I just want an easy way out. But the psalmist says, God, be glorified in this, you know. Just however this works out, it's not what I wanted, it's not what I planned, but I still want you to be glorified in this. I think that's a fantastic prayer, isn't it? Isn't that a wonderful prayer? So two keys then to standing firm. Let's reduce everything down to two keys to stand firm in a crisis under pressure. Firstly, you need an undivided heart. And secondly, you need the desire to see God glorified in the crisis you're passing through.